All right, so here we are on what everyone is expecting to be the last week, and have some news for you. Looked at how much we were going to cover today, and I was like, ain't no way. So if you will, go ahead and forgive me, and even if you won't, we're still going to do it. We're going to extend this one last week because there's just far too much for me to feel like I could do justice. I feel like everybody would want to stone me on the way out of church today, and so the reason I had these grouped all together is because they all speak on the exact same theme. And they more or less teach the same lesson. So when I was preparing ahead of time, I said, you know, I don't want to have to preach the same message twice. And so I'll just smash them all together. And the only way I could figure how to do that is to remove this from a particular context. And then, you know, we'd be going against our very own standards of, we read things in context. So in order for there to be context and us understand the stories, it's going to be a two-part sermon over 2 weeks, okay? That's just what it's going to be. So if you come back next week and you're like, isn't that kind of the same thing you said last week? The answer is kind of yes, but we'll use different stories to say it, okay? So we're going to see how much we can get through today. We'll finish up next week, and I don't have any intention on making it any longer than next week, but in order for us to cover these last several kingdom parables, I feel like we're going to need 2 weeks in order to do it. So here we are, Matthew 24. This is right before the end of when Jesus gets betrayed and crucified. From our last ones, he had talked about the religious leaders that had failed to bring people to the preparation to accept their king and were trying to hold on to their ownership of the kingdom. And I didn't find today, I was going to check on it, I forgot. So you guys can do this while I'm preaching, that'd be great. But I have a sneaky suspicion that this happens right after Jesus goes and cleanses the temple. When he goes in, he sees the money changers. Now, immediately around here, I'm not finding any headers that are giving me that in Matthew. So it's probably one of those things where you got to compare the different gospels. So that's my best guess. And if I'm wrong, I apologize. But Jesus is headed to Jerusalem. He does his, in Matthew 23, he has a lament over Jerusalem, saying how he wished that they would just come to him. But instead, Jerusalem kills prophets instead of listening to them and returning to the Lord. And so here we have a series of parables. What we read in our scripture reading, depending on what translation you have, the word parables actually there. The Greek word for parable is there. The ESV that we read for scripture reading said, now learn this lesson. But that word lesson means parable. Now learn this parable from the fig tree. So then we're like, okay, here's a parable. And like it just says, like, when it's starting to bud, you knew summer's here. And we're like, okay, what's the parable? Then it goes into another seeming parable near the end, of talking about the faithful servant, who the master goes away and the servant is put in place and he does what he's supposed to do. The master comes back and he's rewarded. But if he hadn't and instead said, oh, he's not coming back, he's been away far too long, I'm just going to take ownership of it, he's going to be judged. And then Jesus then gives us a parable at the beginning of Matthew 25 about the parable of the 10 virgins or bridesmaids, which we will talk about today. And then after that is the well-known parable of the talents, which is somewhat confusing, which we'll probably get to next week. And then Jesus talks about another parable about sorting of sheep and goats. So there's a whole lot of parables all at once, and more or less they teach the same thing. The lesson is, are you ready for when the king does come? Now the question is, why would Jesus be talking in so many parables about being ready for when the king comes? Well, wouldn't you know it? Context sets the stage for you. So let's back up just a little bit in Matthew 24. As Jesus left and was going out of the temple complex, his disciples came up and called his attention to the temple buildings. So they're leaving the temple. Maybe after Jesus throws the tables, I think he does that twice. So, I mean, there's a good chance, right? just telling people, like, this is not how the temple's supposed to work, and they leave. And the disciples are like, hey, Jesus, look at that cool building. Look at that great picture of the vine. I really feel like that vineyard relief really added to your parable lesson. And, you know, you really told those Pharisees good word. And they're talking about the temple complex. And this is one of the more glorious opportunities in the temple's history is when the government gave a whole bunch of money and started making the temple look cool. Because, if you remember the history of the temple, Solomon built the temple, and it was amazing. It was just crazy good. Like, gold everywhere, the best of the best. People were giving from all the nations of the world to build this temple in Jerusalem, and it was huge and it was glorious. And then Israel continually was unfaithful to God, eventually ends up in exile. The temple ends up getting destroyed. I mean, we've covered, like last year, the exiles return and they lay the foundation of the temple and then they cry because it's little. It's cool because we're reestablishing the worship of God, but it's not going to be glorious. And they rebuild the temple and it's kind of small and pathetic. And then they rebuild the walls of Jerusalem to be like a third of the size Jerusalem used to be. It was kind of small and pathetic. But now, when Jesus is there, the Romans and Herod have contributed to the expansion of this temple. And so the Jewish people of Jesus' day are excited because their temple is finally being restored to its previous glory. And so they're talking to Jesus and say, hey, isn't this great? You know, here's the temple. Look at all of the things that are being built. And Jesus gives one of the most buzzkill statements ever. Don't you see all these things? He's like, yeah, take one last look. I assure you, not one stone will be left here on another that will not be thrown down. His disciples are looking at the temple, like, look how cool this is. Like, there's progress being made. You know, people are coming to this temple. And Jesus said, yeah, and the Jewish people and the religious leaders don't understand who God is. And they are ripping people off in the outer court. Yeah, it's not great. And Jesus says, yeah, take a look. Because these stones aren't going to stay. That wall is not going to be there. It's going to come apart. It will be destroyed. So then the disciples kind of like get hushed for a minute. And then as they follow him, he goes out to the Mount of Olives, which is just outside the city walls. The disciples approach him privately and said, so tell us, when will these things happen? The tumbling of the temple, because the stones won't be on one another. And what is the sign of your coming and of the end of the age? So on their walk from the temple out of Jerusalem to the Mount of Olives, the disciples were contemplating, saying, well, Jesus said, take a look. Because these are the stones won't stay on each other. Now, if, in fact, Jesus had just recently cleansed the temple of the money changers, I think the disciples are thinking Jesus is going to destroy the temple, which is what the Pharisees accuse him of later. That he was going to destroy the temple and then put it back together in 3 days. So the disciples are like, well, we're following Jesus, and if Jesus is going to destroy the temple, we better know when that's going to happen so we're ready. Well, maybe they didn't think that, and maybe they're just like, well, we don't want to lose the temple. When's this going to happen? And certainly this means it's like the end. Like, it's the end of life as we know it. And so then if it's the end of life as we know it, and then Jesus has been offering this kingdom the entire time we've known him, and we think he's the king, and we've called him the king, are those things related? So they say to Jesus, tell us, when is this going to happen? They're like, what, are we putting that on a calendar here somewhere? Like, what's going to happen? And is that the sign that you're going to fully come in as king? Is that the temple's going to be in ruins, and then you're going to come in and change life as we know it? So then Jesus replies on verse 4, watch out that no one deceives you, for many will come in my name saying, I am the Messiah, and they will deceive many. You are going to hear of wars and rumors of wars. see that you are not alarmed. Because these things must take place, but the end is not yet. For nation will rise up against nation, kingdom against kingdom. There will be famines and earthquakes in various places. And all of these events are the beginning of birth pains. All right, so let's just have an honest survey here. Who all thought about staying home because there's a good chance we're going to talk about eschatology today? Just me? Okay. Well, I made it here. How many of you came to church today because we were going to have to talk about eschatology? Yep. That's what I figured. So the disciples asked the question, when is this going to happen? Is this a sign of you coming? You know, if things are going to be destroyed and, you know, life is going to get bad, is that the sign of your coming? Is that the end of the world? Is that the end of life as we know it? And Jesus says, don't be deceived. Don't be alarmed. But he does say there's going to be tons of trouble. Okay? So he says, don't be deceived. A lot of people are going to show up and say, I'm the Messiah. Now, he's talking to his disciples. His disciples know who he is. So, like, they're going to be terribly confused if someone shows up and be like, I'm the Messiah. They're like, no, this guy is. I think that they're saying, I'm going to be the problem solver. Right? Because that's what we're thinking. There's going to be trouble, and we need someone to fix it. And there's going to be tons of people that are going to say, I'm the one to fix it. Sound like an election cycle? I'm going to fix every problem we have. Don't be tricked. Not into thinking that they're Jesus, but don't buy into the fact that they're going to fix all your problems. There are going to be problems. There will always be problems. And he said there's going to be wars, which there are right now. Rumors of wars, which there still are and have been for a long time in many different places. But don't be alarmed. Don't start panicking as though you missed something or as though there is for sure some result going to have to happen with Jesus coming and fixing it all. He says, for nation will rise up against nation, kingdom against kingdom, which we've seen throughout the course of history. There will be famines, which there have been and are. There are earthquakes in various places, which there is, in weird places, like where out east where I'm from, not very normal time to be having earthquakes, and yet there are earthquakes. It's almost like Jesus like knows creation like from the beginning or something. Like he understands how the world's going to work. But notice verse 8, all of these events are just the beginning of birth pains, labor pains, right? So like, yes, sort of, he says to the disciples, yeah, it's kind of signs that I'll be coming, but it's early signs. It's when you think you're going into labor and you call your doctor or whatever and they're like, oh, no. Yeah, probably a couple more days, right? And it's uncomfortable. It's not ideal, but it is not time to deliver the baby. So Jesus says, all of those things that you're asking about wars, kingdoms fighting and turning over, all sorts of trouble, destruction, natural disasters, that's just the beginning. So then he keeps talking. Verse 9. So all that stuff's bad enough. And then he says, and then after you realize like those are just the beginning of the labor pains, then they will hand you over for persecution and they will kill you. Oh, good. So is that the sign that you're coming? We're going to start killing Christians off all over the place. And they will kill you. You'll be hated by all nations because of my name. Then many will take offense, betray one another, hate one another. Many false prophets will rise up and deceive many because lawlessness will multiply. The love of many will grow cold. Because people are getting away with things, people begin to stop loving one another. But verse 13, but the one who endures to the end will be delivered. Now, we can certainly apply that to many areas of theology and things, but notice the immediate statement before. The love of many will grow cold, but the one who endures, the one who continues to love instead of letting love grow cold, they will be delivered. This good news, this gospel of the kingdom will be proclaimed in all the world as a testimony to all nations, And then the end will be welcome to come, is sort of what he says. This is, and then the end will come. Many people have taken that to mean, as soon as we get the gospel into every border, every ethnic group, every whatever biological framework we're trying to think through, that the second we get the gospel out to every people group, then the end will happen. What will happen? And I don't think that's what Jesus is saying. He's saying there's a lot to happen before the end is actually here. But if you want to look at these signs and say they're kind of the signs of the end, well, sort of, kind of like labor pains, like baby kicking you, and then your Braxton Hicks contractions are sort of signs that, you know, it's almost time to have a baby. And Jesus says there's a whole lot to happen before the end. And the things that you think are the signs that it's the end of the world are not the signs that it's the end of the world. It's the beginning of a long stretch before the end comes. And my concern is that the gospel, the good news of this kingdom, gets spread to all the nations before the end comes, which we have to understand is quite the tall order for 12 laymen in Jerusalem to go take the gospel to the entire world. So then verse 15, those, I mean, some of you are probably like, oh, come on, you're like not reading in all these cool things. This is where the things get kind of dicey here. Verse 15, so when you see the abomination that causes desolation spoken of by the prophet Daniel standing in the holy place, let the reader understand, then those in Judea must flee to the mountains. So Jesus says, and then the end will come, and then when you see this take place, that's when you might want to start panicking. And not actually panicking, but be like, oh, like now it's the end. Like, man, I mean, we've been doing this for generations, but okay, now. A man on the housetop must not come down to get things out of his house. A man in the field must not go back to get his clothes. Woe to pregnant women and nursing mothers in those days, because that's going to be a terrible inconvenience for fleeing from Judea out to everywhere else. Pray that your escape may not be in the winter or on a Sabbath, because, you know, winter travel is terrible, and on a Sabbath, you've been told you're not allowed to move more than 15 steps or whatever it was. For at that time, there will be great tribulation. You thought the problems you had before were bad. When it just keeps getting more and more and worse, and kind of like labor pains. Like, when you see this, that's like when the doctor says, this is when I want you to come in. So, like, the water broke, okay? And it was like, okay, now might be time to start packing up and go away, okay? At that time, there would be great tribulation, the kind that hasn't taken place from the beginning of the world until now and never will again. This is the kind of problem that the world has never seen before. It'll be so devastating. Unless, 22, those days were limited, no one would survive. Apocalyptic. End of the world type things. How many of you see those natural disaster movies where they're like, you know, it's an asteroid or some terrible huge storm, like that kind of thing. Like the world would not survive if someone didn't stop those days from happening. But those days will be limited because of the elect, because of believers, because of the citizens of the kingdom. Those days won't be allowed to last so long that the whole world just dissolves and goes completely dead on its own. I'm like, this is really weird. Yeah, I know, it is. But then in this context, Jesus says again, but if anyone tells you then, when the world is almost completely dead, like we're not going to survive, the whole planet's going to freeze or burn or whichever one we're worried about at the current time. He says, look, here's the Messiah. Here's the person who's going to fix it all. Or over here. Here he is. He's not over there. He's over here. The guy who's going to fix it all. The Messiah. Don't believe it. False messiahs and false prophets will arise and perform great signs and wonders to lead astray, if possible, even the elect. So take note, I have told you in advance. You guys taking notes? Write this down. Jesus is like, I told you well before any of this happens. So if they tell you, look, he's out in the wilderness, don't go out. Look, he's in the inner rooms, do not believe it. See? people are going to constantly proclaim, this is the person, this is the business, this is the political party that, you know, that's going to fix all of the world's problems. He's like, don't believe it, because you know me, I'm the Messiah. I'm the one that's going to fix it all. Don't be deceived into grasping at hope from other people. For as the lightning comes from the east and flashes as far as the west, so will be the coming of the Son of Man. And wherever the carcass is, there the vultures will gather. There's a ton of statements in here that I don't understand. I'm just going to lay it out there. I have ideas. I have opinions. Mainly because some of those things that I don't understand have to fit with other things that I do think I understand. And so there is a lot in here. And I know that not everybody in our congregation has the same view of the end times. But there are a lot of things that, regardless of when you think things happen and what order and what you're expecting to happen next, the parables that Jesus tells us what he's saying in this section in a little bit, for me, a clearer fashion than what we just read. And this is how rabbis work, right? They teach a lesson, they tell a parable that teaches the same lesson as what they just said. This is what we've seen before. There's a question, Jesus responds, then tells a parable. It just so happens that Jesus' response here happens to be a whole lot longer than everything else, okay, that we've seen so far. They say, well, can rich people get into the kingdom of heaven? Like, who's going to make it in? And they say, well, anyone that gives up what they have, you know, will be widely rewarded in the kingdom. And you have to become like children in order to become good citizens of the kingdom. So the question the disciples ask is, so when is it? Like, when's your kingdom coming? Is the destruction of the temple a sign that you're going to be here? Jesus says, well, sort of, you're not wrong that until I do come, there's going to be a lot of problems. And it's going to get worse and harder and fiercer. It's going to be weird. You're going to be super confused because the kingdom you thought was doing so well just suddenly dissolves into nothingness. And it's just the beginning. And then there's more. And then they're gonna want to round you up and kill you. They're gonna take you out and try to get rid of you all. And still, don't panic. Don't be alarmed. All these things have to happen. And when you see this, that's when you might be like, time to get going. But don't be deceived, because people are gonna give you solutions to the problems, and those aren't the solutions to the problem. I'm the solution, and you know me. You know I'm the solution to the problem. But wait, keep waiting. Regardless of how your circumstances shake out, keep waiting for me, because I am the Messiah. I am the King. This good news of my kingdom must reach the ends of the earth. In verse 29, immediately after the tribulation of those days, when things are so bad the world couldn't possibly end, and if they didn't get cut short, the world wouldn't be around, but they're going to get cut short because of the elect. But even when that happens, you don't go falling for what everybody is telling you. After those tribulation of those days, the sun will be darkened, the moon will not shed its light, the stars will fall from the sky, and the celestial powers will be shaken. Like, literally, the things that we look at in the sky at night will no longer be doing their jobs. That's a big deal. Now, we're worried about, you know, a couple of degrees Fahrenheit of temperature change, and meanwhile, like, things in the sky could just, like, stop working. Then, at that point, the sign of the Son of Man will appear in the sky when the sky bodies stop doing their job. So when the stars and the planets and all this stuff don't do it, the Son of Man sign will appear in the heavens. Then all the peoples of the earth will mourn, and they will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. He will send out his angels with a loud trumpet, and they will gather his elect from the four winds, from one end of the sky to the other. So when things get so bad, the world looks like it's going to end, and even things start falling and dying and not working in the sky, then I'll show up. And then people of the earth will see it, and they will mourn. Why? Well, because that was the solution, and we weren't ready for it. And we don't want it. That's not the solution we wanted. And the angels will come and do the work that the other parables, we talked about, the angels are going to go gather the elect out. They're going to sort the wheat and the tares. They're going to sort the fish. They're going to sort all the other sorting things. And at the end of this chapter, and next chapter, sheep and goats, which we'll talk about next week. But the angels are going to show up and do their job. That's when my kingdom will be. So the disciples are like, so is that the sign? And he's like, oh, no, that ain't the sign. It's just the beginning. And let me tell you, it's going to be so bad that you're not going to recognize it. And things are going to be so terrible that you will be so desperate that the only solution remaining must be me. And then I'll come. And we will bring in the kingdom. So then, Jesus then tells the parables. Okay, so I did my best I can. From here, I can bring other passages in, but that's not what we're doing in the sermon series, so we're not doing it today. But then Jesus teaches these parables, which teach the same thing as he just said. So hopefully these couple of parables help us understand what he's saying. So 32 through 35, he says, there's a parable, there's a lesson to learn from the fig tree. As soon as its branch becomes tender and sprouts, you know that summer is near. So he says, hey, when you look at a fig tree and you see the wood become softer and you start seeing little buds, you know that summer's almost here. We don't have the fig trees here, but we do the same thing. There's actually like for the forsythia thing is actually like the correct time to put down pre-emergent on your lawn if you want to write that down. It's a freebie for you. Because the temperature of the soil is finally warm enough because that bush blooms at a certain time. It's the same thing. We look at a plant and say, like, oh, it's time for this. Tulips pop through, daffodils pop through, and we're like, oh, it's almost spring. Jesus saying the same thing to the answer to the question that they ask. In the same way, when you see all of these things, all of these problems, all this tribulation, all this persecution, know that he, and some translations would even say it or summer here again, that he is near at the door. I said, you do need to be observant. Don't walk around with your eyes closed, pretending like everything's fine. Because I just told you that everything's not going to be fine. And you're going to be constantly being asked to believe that someone else is going to solve the problems that I am going to solve. So don't walk around with your eyes closed. Keep your eyes open. So when you see all these things, you're like, yep, this is exactly what Jesus said would happen. And he said, don't be tricked. Jesus is the king. So I assure, and then verse 34, this verse gets very interesting as well. I assure you, this generation will certainly not pass away until all of these things take place, which I think the immediate listeners probably thought, like, oh, okay, like our generation. If this statement's only about the destruction of the temple, that would work. But it says all these things, and sometimes the all things doesn't mean all, but anyhow. There's various ways to take this. The generation, meaning the people of Israel, it means like the people. It could mean the immediate generation of people there. And it could even just be a generic thing to like humans. I don't know which one to tell you for sure it means as far as what he is promising here, that the generation won't pass away. But then he says this, which makes it seem like it can't be just the 40-year people there. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will never pass away. Okay? So this parable mainly is to tell us, keep your eyes open. And for anyone who's just falling asleep, that was just not aimed at you. Keep your eyes open and be observant. Understand that you live in a troubled world. And Jesus is the only solution, which should cause us to long for him even more. And no matter how long it takes, Jesus' words never fail. Jesus' words never stop taking effect. Jesus is the solution. He is coming back. He will be bringing his entire kingdom with him. He will be sending his angels to gather out the citizens of the kingdom. And then, after that parable, verse 36, now concerning that day and hour, no one knows. So clearly, the whole generation not passing away, no one knows. Now, if you want to, what you should go through is in chapters 24 through 25, circle the word ready, circle or underline the statement saying, you don't know. So it happens a lot. Now, concerning that day and the hour, when I'm coming, nobody knows. Not even the angels in heaven, not even the Son. Jesus is like, I don't even know. Like, I don't know when I'm coming back. Only the Father in heaven knows, and it will be like, and this, depending on, could be considered parable, as the days of Noah were, so the coming of the Son of Man will be. Those days before the flood, they were eating, drinking, marrying, and giving in marriage. Life was usual. The days of Noah, however, have been told about the worst in human history. Nobody cared about what God said. Nobody did what God said. Everyone was coming up with new ways to be evil. But they just had life as usual, and nobody knew that anything was going to happen until the flood swept them all away. And it's not because they didn't know, because Noah had been telling them, I'm building this giant boat for 120 years. The people around him knew that he was expecting that the judgment was going to come. He was telling them that flood's going to come. And they're like, eh, life as usual. So they were surprised when the flood swept them away. And that's the way it will be with the coming of the Son of Man, verse 39, verse 40. Two men will be in a field, one will be taken, one will be left. Two women will be grinding at the mill, one will be taken, one will be left. Now, depending on your view of eschatology, you're going to have to put that somewhere in some sort of time situation. But what Jesus is saying is, this is how life will be. Life will just be normal. It will be bad, but we'll keep doing life. We'll eat, we will drink, we will get married, we will have jobs, we will do things that we need to in order to survive. And then all of a sudden, one person's going to be gone and somebody's going to be left. Therefore, verse 42, be alert because you don't know what day the Lord is coming. You don't know. We don't know when that's going to happen. We don't know how much into the future that's going to happen. The signs of the days won't tell you when it's going to happen. Anyone that thinks that they can add up numbers of letters and tell you when Jesus is coming back, they don't know. Jesus said he didn't know, so they're presuming to know more than Jesus. And Jesus said that these signs aren't even sure signs. They're just saying, like, yeah, life is going to be this way, and then we're going to keep living our lives, and then it will surprise you. Like the flood surprised the people who knew that it should be coming. You don't know when it's going to happen, but know this. If the homeowner had known what time the thief was coming, he would have stayed awake and not let his house be broken into. That's a no-duh. If you knew that the thief was going to break in at 11:45 in your kitchen window, you would be awake at 11:45 at your kitchen window beating him, okay? But you don't know. That's Jesus' point. You don't know when it's going to happen, so you need to be alert all the time because you don't know when this is going to happen. 44. That's why you must also be ready, because the Son of Man is coming at an hour you don't expect. That's like three times Jesus said the exact same thing. You don't know when I'm coming back. You won't know. There's no way for you to know. And it will be a surprise. It might be a pleasant surprise if you're following Jesus, but it's going to be a surprise. You're going to be doing life just as normal, and Jesus is going to show up and, oh, all right, we're doing that today. So then Jesus says something of a sort of a parable, kind of an illustration about the faithful servant, which we read in our scripture reading, that says, like, so if you don't know when the Lord, the master, is coming back and he's entrusted you with something, then you go to work on that thing until he comes back. But if you get used to the fact that he's gone and you think, nah, he's not coming back, not in my lifetime, and you just go out and live your life however you want, it won't be a pleasant surprise. It'll be an unwelcomed surprise when Jesus shows up and you're like, oh, I was supposed to be doing stuff for you that you gave to me to follow, which we'll talk about next week in a longer parable. So then Jesus feels the need to tell longer parables because he felt like there's a good chance these parables don't make sense to these people, which I'm very thankful for, because if that was it, I don't know if I would have understood what he was trying to teach. So today, our goal is to just cover this one, this long one here in the beginning of 25. The parable of the 10 virgins, which is another, in the context, is talking about bridesmaids. The weddings have some similarities, but some differences. In their culture and time, we talk about this, where Mary and Joseph were betrothed, or engaged, right? And that's actually considered a marriage. Like, they would actually have to get a divorce to break up their engagement. Okay. And the way things worked, a guy, usually arranged the marriage, but the guy still had the formal, had to go talk to the dad and, you know, have some form of a proposal. There was exchanging of gifts. Then there were setting of terms that they would have to meet before they could actually get married. But officially they were together. They were betrothed until then the groom completed all of the terms and of conditions. So like having a job, having a house and all this stuff, right? Then the groom would go to the bride's house where she was living with her parents, go get the bride, and then take her to his house, and there would be a party. That's how, like, their wedding stuff worked. So, like, we're talking, like, years could be happening at that point. So when we get to this, we're going to look at it, and we're like, this is strange, and we'll explain it as we go. So he says all of these things. You need to be ready because you don't know when I'm coming. But don't fall asleep and think that your life doesn't matter because I could show up at any point. 25 verse 1. Then the kingdom of heaven will be like, which gets us back into our normal form of parables for the kingdom. 10 virgins, bridesmaids, who took their lamps or lights or torches and went out to meet the groom. So it sounds like they're going out to meet the groom somewhere, but what they're doing is going to the bride's house because that's what the bridal party did. Okay. The bride had some friends. They would come to her house, wait for the groom to come to her house, pick him up, and then they go to his house and have a party. So that's what these ladies are doing, 10 of them. And it says, verse 5, 5 of them were foolish and 5 were sensible or wise. It's like a wise man built his house on a rock and a foolish man built his house on sand. That's how you should understand this. When the foolish took their lamps or torches, they didn't take olive oil with them or oil for them to keep them lit. They just kind of walked out the house, grabbed their lamp or their torch or whatever, and walked to the bride's house. So that's what makes them foolish. And we'll see why that makes them foolish. But the sensible ones, the wise ones, took oil in their flasks. So they took extra oil. And verse 5, but since the groom was delayed, the groom took a long time, longer than expected, to show up, they all became drowsy and fell asleep. It got really late at night, and they all fell asleep, which is not actually a bad thing here. It's like, that's what normal people do. If it's past midnight, you just fall asleep. It's totally fine. And the way we know that is because the wise ladies here get up and do something else. But in the middle of the night, there was a shout, "Here comes the groom." Instead of "here comes the bride, here comes the groom" is a shout in the streets. And so all of the ladies got up, they trimmed their lamps, which means prepared them. So if it is a wick kind, they would cut it, and, you know, they had them lit. But the foolish one said to the sensible ones, the wise ones, "Give us some of your oil because our lamps are going out." Because the groom took too long to show up, the ladies who didn't bring extra oil ran out. And then these lamps are really important because, especially since it's the middle of the night, they were going to go on a long trek in the dark, and there's no streetlights, to the groom's house to have a party. And this is how you distinguish yourself as part of the bridal party. Like, if some homeless person just walked into a wedding feast, he's not going to have a lamp, and that's how you know who's who. You're supposed to be prepared for this if you're invited, and if you're not invited, you wouldn't be prepared. These ladies were supposed to be prepared, and they didn't have it, so they asked the wise ones, "Give us some of yours, because our lamps are going out. We're not going to make it." The wise ones answered, "No, there won't be enough for us and for you." They said, like, "Well, look, we're filling ours, and we don't have any for you. And if we give you some of ours, all of our lights are going to go out." So they said, "Instead, just go out and buy some," which sounds ridiculous because it's the middle of the night, but if the local town knew that this was going to happen, there's a chance that there's somebody that would sell you some oil in the middle of the night. And so they went out to go get some, but when they came back, the groom had already arrived and took the wedding party to his house and shut the door. And then the other ladies had to go buy oil. They said, "Hey, come on, open us. We now have our lights." And they're like, "No, door shut. I don't know who you are. Because you weren't ready like the wedding party should have been ready." He says, "I assure you, I don't know you. Therefore," here's a lesson, "be alert, because you don't know either the day or the hour of Jesus coming and bringing his kingdom in full. So you should be, always be alert and ready. So the lesson here from these 10 ladies, 5 of them came unprepared. They came with their lamp. It looked like they were ready. Nobody probably asked the 5 wise ones and say, hey, where's your extra oil? Maybe you should get that before we fall asleep in the middle of the night. Nobody saw anything because it looked like they were ready. And everyone knew that that was their responsibility. But it took too long. The groom didn't come when the groom should have come. And so now their oil ran out. And so they asked the ones that did plan, say, hey, how about giving me some of that? They said, no, I don't have enough, but you could go get some. They go to get some, and there's not enough time. So in this context, what does this parable mean? Because, I mean, it's pretty obvious that the lesson is you should be ready because you don't know when Jesus is coming back, which all of these parables are telling us. Okay, so get that through our heads. It's a good start. We don't know when Jesus is coming back, so we should always be ready. But what is taking place in this parable about being prepared for Jesus to come back? I have a couple things, a couple observations that I propose is this. First, all those who look ready are not ready. This parable talks about 10 virgins who were invited to be part of the wedding party. And they all knew what their job and responsibility were, but only half were actually ready to do their job. The other half showed up and everybody expected them to be ready, but they weren't ready. So it is in our lives as well. Whether it be in our family, in our communities, our church even, many of us look like we're ready for when Jesus comes back. But there is a pretty good chance that there are people here who actually are not. They brought their lamp, but they didn't bring any oil. And I don't want to make this an allegory. I'm not going to tell you the oil is this particular spiritual thing. And some of us may have been pretending for a very long time that we are ready for Jesus to show up when we least expect it. But not all who look prepared are prepared, even those who are fully aware of what is required, what the expectations are, and how you do get into the wedding feast. These ladies didn't not have an idea that they needed to have their light. They knew, but they didn't make the necessary preparations. The second thing I want us to understand in here is from verse 5, since the groom was delayed. Anybody feel like Jesus should have come back by now? I think Apostle Paul probably does. Seeing as how he thought that there was a good chance that was going to happen. We don't know. But what we do know, at least now, looking backwards, it's been a whole lot longer than we had hoped. There is something to be said in this parable about perseverance and endurance. That although it would not work as an allegory here, that some of these ladies just were not prepared for Jesus to take so long to come. Maybe they thought that they were ready, but things got really, 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 really bad, and he didn't show up yet. There is a call here to be like the wise ladies and prepare ourselves to be here for a very long time. But not to be like the foolish servant who said, my master's delayed, he's not coming back, at least not while I'm around. It's a really awkward balancing act we have to do. We have to be ready for Jesus to show up whenever, because it could happen at any point, even before I finish the sermon, which I know you're all like, this is taking an eternity already. And then it could happen at any time, so we got to be ready for it, but at the same time, we shouldn't expect it to happen right away. And this is the life that we should be living as kingdom citizens, is we plan to be here for a very long time, doing the work the king has asked us to do, so that when he shows up, we're like, oh good, finally, we can be done. I hate running. I think many of you know that already. But like running a marathon or a super marathon or whatever, you just keep going. You know you're going to be running for an eternity, and you're never feeling like you're going to make it to the end. But if suddenly the race just ends, I'd be like, oh, good. It's finally done. We have to be in this mindset, because Jesus says, you don't know when I'm coming, which both means it could be right this second or it could be in a million years from now. You don't know. And Jesus said, I don't know. Only the Father knows when he's going to send me back. And life in between those things is not going to be roses and butterflies and unicorns. It's going to be a mess. Be prepared to live in the mess for a very long time. Be enduring. Persevere to the end. Don't let the fact that lawlessness is prevailing make your love grow cold. Be the ones who endure to the end. Make the plan for that. Don't be like the rocky and thorny soil. And when things get hard, you wither away. And then finally, there's an extra, if not all the warning already being obvious here. There is a warning here that says that the time to be prepared is before the call that the groom has come. Notice in the story it says, here comes the groom, come out and meet him. And the ladies that weren't ready didn't have the oil, and they had to go buy oil. By the time they came back, they missed it. So it will be with the coming of the Son of Man. There will not be adequate time for you to see the sign of the Son of Man in the sky and then make preparations. You must be prepared ahead, knowing that the groom is coming. We need to prepare our hearts and our lives right now, so that when the call comes, here comes the groom, all we got to do is like turn over, cut off a little bit of a wick, and stand up and leave. Not, oh no, I don't have my life all situated. I haven't taken care of all I need to take care of. And run around, because you're going to miss it. The time to be prepared is now, and the time to stop pretending is now. I always appreciate when people are honest and say, I don't believe in Jesus. I don't believe in God. Because people who pretend break my heart. It's going to be more painful to see people that I thought for sure were ready, scrambling, saying, I'm not. I appreciate when people are honest, because then it becomes clear what I can do for them. So don't be a pretender. Don't be a make-believer. Be a believer. Be prepared for Jesus to come back, but also be prepared to live out your entire life in a messy, broken world and have Jesus not come back while you're alive. Have both of those things ready to go at any moment, and then we'll all be surprised. It's kind of Jesus' thing. It's going to be a surprise wedding party. And if you're prepared to go, you're ready. But if you're not, it's going to be just like in the days of Noah. You knew about it. You didn't prepare for it. You didn't change your mind. You did your life your own way, and you get swept away completely unaware by the fact that Jesus is now coming back. going to close in prayer and preparation. We usually would sing a song after a message, but there is a song that I know that is not very singable, but you're welcome to sing it if you would like. It's in an insert in your bulletin. It's kind of high and weird rhythm, but if you just want to listen, that's fine too. But it's very fitting for our sermon series about the kingdom, about Jesus being our king and us being ready for Jesus to come and wanting him to come. But in the meanwhile, let us live our lives in this broken and messy world, prepared to see Jesus face to face and prepared to live out our entire rest of our days and not become apathetic that Jesus is delayed. We'll pick up again next week in verse 14 of chapter 25. Dear Father, we thank you for your word and we thank you for these promises that you didn't just come, die, and come back to life and go back to heaven and leave us completely unaware. And we thank you even that you didn't actually give us more information, that the information you gave us is exactly the right amount for us. That yes, trouble precedes you bringing in your kingdom, and it will grow worse and worse, and it will lead to a broken world that we live in and that we must be ready to live in. We pray that those people who have heard your word today are ready, they are prepared, that they have accepted Jesus as their king and repented and turned from their sin and accepted the invitation into the kingdom. And we pray that we would be people spreading the news of the kingdom to the ends of the earth, knowing the end is on its way. And like your prophets over the millennia, back thousands of years before Jesus even came, said that the day of the Lord is near, that the day of the Lord is near, that John the Baptist says, see, the Lord has come near to us. Behold, the Lamb, this near and soon, although it might not be soon in the way we count time, it is coming next. And that we can rest in it like the ladies who are wise, knowing it doesn't matter how long it takes for him to show up because I brought enough so I can sleep. But let us not be so arrogant as to think we can sleep because you're not coming, that I can live my life the way I want. Help us to be wise. Help us to keep our eyes open so we are not blindsided by the trouble in our world. Help us to be alert and ready for you at any moment. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.